A playlist original.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Back to the Blockbuster with your hosts, Gaius and Jackson. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing swell, my man. Love a day to record. And right after we wrap up today, I'll be going to see Brandon Cronenberg's Infinity Pool in theaters. So nothing not to love about that. How you doing today?
I'm good. That's going to be a pretty good watch. I've heard, well, all my friends that have said that I've seen it, that said that it was like amazingly weird. I was like, well, then that sounds right up my alley that I really want to see it.
Exactly.
That's perfect.
Everything I expect from a Cronenberg movie. So
yeah. So full disclosure, this is a Tuesday. We were supposed to be recording yesterday on a Monday, which is like our typical day, even though the last like couple of weeks it's been on a Tuesday just because of necessity or because like, you know, a major event happened and we wanted to cover it on that day. Like the Oscar nominations, which is big. But we were in the middle of recording yesterday and there was a power outage. I found out, thought it was just on my block, but then we have this thing called Nextdoor app where everyone like updates each other on like what's going on in the neighborhood. And I used to make fun of it because it's like a bunch of usually older women that are on there. They're like, oh, like a dog like shit in my lot. Yeah, it's always something like that. I looked at it and it was actually, so I'm in Redondo Beach, but they're all relatively close together, but like I'm in Redondo Beach and then our surrounding like beach cities are like Manhattan Beach and Hermosa Beach. They all had power outage yesterday. So it was a little bit more widespread than I thought and never got the reason for it. It was raining, but it definitely wasn't like storming
not
here.
Not hard enough to put out power.
So yeah, I tried to like record on my hotspot and your hotspot's not as strong as like a normal internet connection. So instead of, you know, struggling to cut together like five different stop and goes, we just figured it was better to do this today. But it works out because like there was like a big news day today. So better to touch on that.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Instead of
that worked in our favor.
Yeah, it did. So Monday got sacrificed, but we're here on Tuesday and I have full power and full internet and we're ready to get after it.
We went through the ringer yesterday, but
yeah, back at it. I felt really bad for my boy Jackson here because I was like,
God, no, nothing to feel bad about. Like, we're all set.
I was like, it's not my fault, but yeah. But yeah, we're here.
Exactly.
So guys, if it sounds like in the first like 5 minutes of this, if we're just like, it sounds like we've had this conversation already.
It's
because we have. It might sound a little bit like The Hills or Laguna Beach, you know, like those kind of reality shows where they're like, hey, you had that conversation off camera, now do it again, but on camera. So we'll try to make it sound as natural as we can.
Absolutely. Nothing of this will be new for us, though. But for people listening, they won't know what we were talking about, so they won't be affected.
That's true. So in order to mix it up, yesterday we started with what I watched over the weekend, but changed it up a little bit. We're going to kick it off with what Jackson got to watch over the weekend.
Yeah, and it was a busy week overall. I got a couple watches on the weekend and a couple throughout the week. I'll just preface with saying I got in the new Netflix comedy, You People, but I'll save that. I know you also watched that, so I'll save that for you. There's really one I really wanted to touch on anyhow. But after we recorded last week, I went to see, for my first time ever, saw a viewing of 1981's The Howling, directed by Joe Dante. For viewers that recognize that name, he was the Gremlins director. That's where I know him from anyway.
Yep.
Early 80s werewolf movie, some amazing, amazing practical effects. And it also came out the same year as another really notable werewolf movie, An American Werewolf in London, which was a favorite of mine, horror comedy. Same year, 1981, some astounding special effects. So it's hard not to compare the two. And Gaius, you've seen both.
Both. Yeah, I've seen both. And then like yesterday when we were like looking up, like, because they were like, oh, there's three. I haven't heard of the third one. I actually tried to look for it last night and I couldn't find it. But it's called Wolfen. It was also released in 1981. These are all released within months of each other.
Right.
So it's not like
March to August.
Yeah, and like, you know, yesterday when we were like recording this, like Jackson mentioned, like there's no way that they could have like really like copied each other because they were like, they came out so close together that like their time in production, there's no way that like one saw what the other was doing and then like tried to duplicate it. It was just like a really interesting year to have like all three of those come out.
Yeah. In particular, the scene, and the reason I bring this up is because the again, excluding Wolfen here, because I haven't seen this, but transformation scenes like the main ones, because there's a couple in each movie, but the main ones where the effects are on full display in American Werewolf in London and in The Howling, the scenes, there's some shots that almost look directly out of the other one. And it's funny how the sequence is composed, knowing that each other's production crew wouldn't have had the chance to be influenced by the others. I don't remember which one came out first, but it's just really interesting to see just how similar they were in some shots.
Yeah.
Hard to really pick a favorite between the two. Like there was, I feel like The Howling is a little bit more gooey and gross, but American Werewolves was just so incredible. And I believe The Howling, my buddy Cam, who I watched this with, told me that they use some hydraulics somehow in Howling's transformation scene, which was just a really stunning effect.
Yeah.
Paul, I mentioned this yesterday, no surprise to you. I still am a fan of American Werewolf in London more, just, and to reiterate, it's just because I thought there was more to love about the movie than the werewolf effects. Like if you take out the werewolf effects, it's still a pretty like horror comedy. Whereas I really think The Howling, for me anyway, and just in my opinion, that's really like what I took away from that movie. What I enjoyed the most was the werewolf sequences. Other than that, it was okay.
No, anyway. I can agree with you there. Cause I think horror comedy is really hard to get right. You have to like strike a really good balance, and like they really do with An American Werewolf in London. I do like that one more of the two. But who knows? Maybe if I find Wolfen, that might be my favorite one of the three.
That'd be good to watch sometime.
I gotta try to find it. But yeah, I love American Werewolf in London. You know, I didn't mention this yesterday when we were recording. Have you ever watched the like sequel to like An American Werewolf in Paris? It's really, really bad.
Oh, I know it exists.
Yeah, it's so bad.
A few sequels itself, and Christopher Lee is in the second Howling movie, which actually I'm glad you bring this up because I won't remember it off the top of my head. I'm gonna IMDb it right now. But sequel to The Howling, let me look it up, because I know like The American Werewolf from Paris is a famous title, but The Howling sequel, like literally the second one is, let me pull it up here, it's literally called Howling 2 Serba Werewolf Bitch. That is the name. Believe me, go look it up. It's called Serba Werewolf Bitch. Howling came out 4 years later.
Trying, man.
Not at all.
And to give people the order, just so they're, if they're curious, The Howling came out March 13th, 1981, was a moderate success, made $17.9 million on a $1.5 million budget, so that's still considered success.
$1.5 million
And it's crazy that they're able to do what they did with, like, I mean, even in the 80s, that's still, like, that's insane.
Oh, yeah, props to them.
Yeah, major props to them.
Pat on the back for that production team.
American Werewolf in London came out August 21st. I think Wolfen comes up before this, but I just clicked on this one. August 21st, 1981, on a budget of $5.8 million, made $62 million. So it was the most successful of the three.
Oh,
also, the first ever Academy Award was given for best makeup to American Werewolf in London. And Wolfen, I'm gonna feel like you probably flopped. Wolfen came out.
Yeah, there's a reason we might not know it as much.
Yeah, on July 24th, 1981, so a month prior to American Werewolf in London, on a budget of $17 million, made $10.6 million. So it was not successful. Might have a cult following now. It might be people that really love it now. I was just looking at the cast. The cast is Albert Finney,
who we got
Gregory Hines, and Edward James Olmos. So it's not like a horrible cast. Yeah.
Albert Finney, I reckon.
I do too. So we're going to have to find that one and maybe like watch it and try to like. Maybe we'll dissect it for you guys. Or maybe we'll do like all three of them, like a special episode one day.
You know what? Yeah. In October, actually, lump September in there too. I almost exclusively watch horror horror related movies for those 2 months just because I'm a Halloween guy and I like to get in the spirit. Minus like theatrical releases are coming out of that aren't horror movies. But.
Yeah,
maybe around October that would be a good sequence of movies to get in to re-experience. American London will be almost a yearly watch for me around that time of year because it's just such a special movie and I love it so much. But moving on just to the last thing, and even though it wasn't a tangent I wanted to go on, what I really wanted was Blood Part 2, which I got in over the weekend.
Yeah,
so viewers who listened to last week's episode know that I was fresh off a watch from first movie to feature Rambo, the character. So you had mentioned that the sequels, and they very much do, you were absolutely right, but that the sequels take a very different tone and approach in terms of like just they're very much, at least the second one, that's the only sequel I've seen, is a crazy, crazy balls to the wall 80s action movie in the most pure sense. Oh, I had so much fun with that movie, man. Like, I really wanted it out because it was my first watch. Besides, like, maybe some scenes I'd seen on cable TV growing up as a kid, I just wouldn't have realized what movie it was. I recognized a couple parts. But to anyone who's A, that maybe even hasn't seen any of the Rambo movies or has seen Blood and hasn't seen any others and is looking for something to watch, if you like 80s action or if you like Sylvester Stallone, like, it comes highly recommended for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great. I mean, it's not perfect by any means, but as far as like what it's be, I thought it was a 10 out of 10, to be honest.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I mean, like I said, I told, and the sequels kind of follow, they all kind of follow suit after the second one. They kind of remain like very much an 80s, like a hardcore action movie, which I mean, I think you kind of mentioned yesterday that it might have started that kind of trope of like having like the typical, like, which is fine. I mean, I know critics didn't love it, the shift in tone,
Probably not.
but like, I think it made more money than the first one, so like it must have struck a chord with like
And probably a bigger budget too, I
yeah
guess. I didn't look, but
yeah it struck a chord with moviegoers, so that's cool. And I mean, like I said, I haven't watched them in a while. I mentioned yesterday, I think I was like 17 or 18 when I watched the Rambo movies for the first time, and I remember watching particularly the first two back to back and just being astonished at how different they were, like complete tone change, like, but
Oh, without a doubt. Not even the same.
Yeah, you made a good point yesterday where it's like, you know, in the world of sci-fi, it's like comparing like Alien to Aliens. Like, it's like one is like a little bit more visceral and like a little bit more thought-provoking, and then
And
like,
grounded.
and grounded. And like, you know, something like Aliens is like a little bit more driven by action. Also great in its own right. I mean, I love both of those movies. I prefer Alien because I like the slow burn kind of
Same
horror movie
boat,
aspect of it.
absolutely. I love both, but prefer Alien.
But yeah,
Glad
that
you
was a good
mentioned that.
comparison. Very good
Yeah,
comparison
well,
there.
thanks. And that's a great segue into another point that I had mentioned about this, that the original script for Blood Part 2 was written by James Cameron. And this is something that I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if you knew, but I didn't get the chance to mention yesterday. So for those that know, so James Cameron wrote the original script, and then Stallone, I don't know to what degree he kind of tweaked it, but he did. They both share credits on it, but from what I understand, James Cameron wrote it, and then Sylvester Stallone got his hands on it and really tweaked it up, did the final script. And according to James Cameron himself, he says James Cameron wrote the action sequences of it, not necessarily all of them, but the action sequences for that movie are very much attributed to him, where Sylvester Stallone came in and wrote, kind of incorporated the political side of the story into the script, which it does take a big step up in terms of like some of the broad nations and of like the United States being involved in Vietnam at that time. And props to both of them because the action is super well helmed, a little gratuitous. Thought it worked well. Like I said, it's very much an over the
It's
top
the
80s movie.
'80s.
But I liked what Sylvester brought to the script as well. And his acting in general was again phenomenal. He's got a couple moments of some dramatic chops. Not so impactful as that end scene from the first one, I think, but I still really overall liked his performance in it. And that's what I wanted to touch on about that. That was my favorite watch of the week, I'd say probably.
That's, you know, it's interesting. I wouldn't have, like, if you were to like tell me like what part of the script James Cameron wrote, I wouldn't have guessed like the action stuff. I mean, I would have
Neither did
assumed that
I.
he, I would have assumed he'd be the more like, you know, wanting to like be a little bit smarter and like put in like the political, like thought-provoking stuff. Yeah, it's funny
And it
because
came
James
out right
Cameron,
before Aliens, the year
yeah, and like
before. So he
James
was
Cameron
hot
has like
shit.
dipped his toe in like he was, I mean, he was involved in the Spider-Man project before Sam Raimi did the 2002 movie, and he wrote
Yeah, I
a
forgot about that.
wrote a treatment for it. And like, I think one of the things that remained in like the Sam Raimi one was the organic like web shooters actually come out of his body rather than him making mechanical web shooters. That was a James Cameron idea. I still don't understand why they did that. It's I just thought, I always thought it was weird. That was like, it was a weird change. But yeah, but they kept it. That was a James Cameron creation. So yeah, a little interesting tidbits about James
Super.
Cameron
It
in
made me
this
just
little.
appreciate it a little bit more because I feel guilty over like not necessarily bashing Avatar 2 lately, but not feeling the best about it, not feeling like it for it. So I was like, okay, I gotta give some love to my boy James. He's Canadian like me, so. And I
True.
did like what he brought to the movie. I just was so surprised. Oh, and another thing that I forgot to mention, the director, I don't know if we had the chance to chat this, but before I had joined, have you ever seen Tombstone, like the 90s movie with
Yeah,
Kurt
with
Russell?
Val
Bill
Kilmer.
Paxton's in it. Val Kilmer, yeah. So same director as Rambo 2, George P. Costamos. I hope I'm saying that right. And so that was a name that I had recognized. I was like, oh, cool. I just saw one of his movies like a few weeks ago and didn't know that he had made Rambo 2. So Yeah, good director. I like both of those movies very, very much, so recommend them both.
You know what's
But yeah.
crazy is that not a Western guy at all, but
Oh,
I
really, eh?
fucked with Tombstone though. Tombstone is so good. And I think it's just
Tombstone was
because
fucking sweet.
like, I mean, everyone's good in it, but Val Kilmer is so good in Tombstone. Like, it's like
Yeah.
one of his most iconic roles, and he like, Val Kilmer had a rep for like getting too into some of the stuff he was playing. Like, he wouldn't say that he was method, but other people that might have worked with him might have said he
Oh
was
my God,
method.
I would think he's, yeah. He does consider himself method.
Yeah, but whatever works. I mean, that's one of like the most like I would say like for any actor, one of the most iconic roles that a lot like any actor has played. Like he's really he st almost steals that whole movie. He's just so
Oh,
good
every
in it.
scene he's in, you're looking
Yeah.
at him. I thought
Yeah,
Kurt
that's
was great
like
too. He's one of my favorite actors, so the
yeah,
two of them
that's
going at it was awesome.
really good. Yeah, I agree. God. See, this is much better than yesterday. We got to touch on different things that we probably didn't even think about
Yeah.
recording
Maybe
yesterday.
we're best.
Worked out for the best.
Let's hear what you got in.
All right, so unknowingly, I even bring this up yesterday. You watched something with werewolves in it, and then I watched a TV show about werewolves.
Oh, yeah.
I watched Wolf Pack, the first episode of Wolfpack on Paramount Plus. Like I said yesterday, the only reason I started watching it is because Sarah Michelle Gellar is on it, and she used to be on Buffy the Vampire Slayer for 7 seasons. One of my actually my favorite TV show. A lot of genre people still talk highly about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And so it was a big deal that like that she's doing a genre show. I mean, she's done other shows and stuff since Buffy, but like I think everyone wanted her to go back to doing like a supernatural kind of like
Right.
series. So I watched the first episode, and despite what my friends think, who think I would just say that it was good because Sarah Michelle Gellar is on it, I actually enjoyed the first episode quite a bit. I thought
Okay.
that I was surprised. I mean, because it is a young adult like series about werewolves created by Jeff Davis, who created Teen Wolf. Not a spinoff of Teen Wolf, though. It
Gonna
was
fool
widely,
me.
yeah, it was widely reported in the beginning that it was because they announced the Teen Wolf like reunion movie that they did. It came out the same day as this and this show at the same time. So a lot of people thought like, oh, is this like a
Yeah.
spinoff of Teen Wolf? And then he eventually corrected them. It's actually based on a 2004 book by a Canadian author named Ido Van Belkom. And yeah, it just follows like there's Sarah Michelle Gellar is like an arson investigator, and there's this big wildfire, and this wildfire kind of causes this like supernatural thing to awaken in this town, and it turns some of the kids into werewolves, and they're trying to figure out like why this is happening and like all that kind of stuff. Just
That's
an
a cool premise.
episode in. I mentioned yesterday, like you don't cast someone like her if you're not gonna like use her for something bigger later in the show. Right
Right.
now, she's just introducing herself in episode one. You kind of get the hint that something more might be going on with her. But I
Right.
kind of feel like that they might reveal more of a connection to what's going on in the town and her character, kind of in future episodes. But I would recommend anyone that was on the fence. It did get mixed reviews from critics, but I think I was looking on Twitter and stuff. It seemed like people that enjoy this kind of thing really enjoyed the first episode. And some critics that got like to watch the first three episodes that are more like in my lane, the more like supernaturals, like they like this kind of stuff. They enjoyed the first
Right.
three episodes that they watched, and I'm gonna continue to give it a shot. I will be honest, if it gets bad, I will let you know if it gets bad. If it
Yeah, let
continues
me
to
know.
be
I'll be
good,
following that with you.
yeah, I will. And I forgot to mention this yesterday. I did watch episode three of The Last of Us, which it was a
Right.
great episode of
I'll be
television.
seeing it today. I haven't seen it yet. I can't fucking wait because I've been loving the show.
Yeah, great episode of television. Like, if you go on social media right now, everyone is singing this episode's praises, and I think everyone is enjoying the show so far because it's up 12% again in viewership. It just keeps going up and up and
Wow.
up. Just really
Strong start to the
solid
year.
show. Yeah, very strong
Yeah.
start to the year on TV. Okay, and then I watched a movie, even though it wasn't in theaters, it's on streaming. I did watch Shotgun Wedding with Jennifer Lopez and Josh
Right.
Duhamel and Jennifer Coolidge. I'm mentioning Jennifer Coolidge because she's having a pretty big moment. I will
She's all over
preface
the
this.
place.
Yeah, I will preface this with like she's not in the movie as much as like the trailers would like lead you to believe, but what she is in is pretty funny. From those of you that don't know or are not familiar with the movie, this was the movie that was supposed to star Jennifer Lopez and Armie Hammer, and then
Dun dun dun.
Armie Hammer got in trouble and started talking about eating girls and stuff. Something along those lines.
It's not funny. It's
It's
disturbing. It's just
disturbing.
how we
Yeah,
finally got here. Yeah.
Yeah, I think within like 2 weeks he got cast in this, and then they found out about that, and he started getting dropped from all of his projects, and he got dropped from this. Josh Duhamel came in at the last minute. I mentioned it yesterday. It's a Jennifer Lopez romantic comedy. It's fine in the moment. I thought it was like a good 90 minute or so diversion. I do want to mention this again though, that like we were at the bar and this trailer came on, and like it was me, Owen, our other friend Jenny, like watching the trailer, and then the trailer was over, and then like at the same time we were like, oh, that movie looks so, and he said it before I could say anything, he said terrible, and I was like oh, and I stopped talking, and he's like, what? He's like, you were gonna say good, weren't you? I was like, it looks all right. I thought it looked okay. But I won't expect him to watch it. But if you do need like, a 90 minute something to pass the time, it's not like a horrible way to spend 90 minutes. It's like candy basically. Like it's easy to digest. It's high in the moment. It's not gonna you're not gonna rem It's not gonna be memorable at the end of the year, like when you're thinking about like, what
It'll come and
you
go, sort of.
yeah. Yeah. And then I guess the other one is the one that you also watched. I watched You People on Netflix, and
Pleasant surprise.
I thought it was
Well,
really,
not
really good.
surprise, but yeah, I thought I enjoyed it as well. I just didn't know really what to expect. But I remember we were chatting about this when the trailer came out, the last trailer, and I had said that, like, maybe in the hands of somebody else, I wouldn't give this movie a second look. Because Jonah was attached. I didn't would say like the other person who co-wrote with him. I just wasn't familiar with him. But Jonah in particular is what I went to that movie for. And I do think they helmed it pretty good. I thought there were some funny moments. It was a clever social satire,
Yeah, I
social
thought so too.
commentary rather.
Yeah, we mentioned this yesterday, how it's like kind of hard to like walk that line of like being like offensive and not offensive and still trying to be funny. And I think they did a good job with, so it's written by Jonah Hill and Kenya Barris. Kenya Barris also created Blackish, so he already has that kind of like sense of humor and tone down. I thought it was, I know, I thought it was really funny. I thought you mentioned this yesterday, that how Eddie Murphy wasn't really like over the top. He really plays it mostly straight. Like kind of
Yeah, he
not as
does.
like, but it works because like his delivery is like really, really like on point. And then like
Yeah.
I think you said yesterday too that Jonah Hill, either you could tell these are Jonah Hill written lines, or that he improv like something, in a typical Jonah Hill fashion. But like yeah, I thought they were really good together, and I thought like it has a really great ensemble cast. If like you're a lot of random people popping up in it, like David Duchovny, Julia Louis Dreyfus, Nia Long, Laura London. Mike Epps pops up in there. Like, there's a lot of really good, funny people in it. I want to
And
mention this
everyone did
again
a
too.
good job.
I thought so too. And I mentioned this yesterday, but like, the movie got mixed reviews from critics, but I honestly think that regular, casual movie watchers will enjoy it more than like, I think critics maybe overhyped it themselves because of who's involved and thought like they were gonna get something a little bit more. But I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I would recommend it to anyone that was
Yeah,
curious to watch it.
and I'm tough on comedies, and I had a good enough time watching it. So, like, take that, do with that what you will. Like, thought as far as comedies go, it wasn't like an Adam Sandler comedy or like a slapstick, like stupid, goofy humor. Like, there were some intelligent, like good, serious moments in it. And the comedy, the name of the comedy wasn't like what you'd expect from like maybe another Netflix comedy. But yeah, no, I overall probably go back to it maybe eventually someday.
It also
Solid
had
enough
heart too.
watch.
It wasn't just like a
Yeah,
stupid comedy. It actually had like a, I had a
good
message and
love
everything
story.
too. Yeah, I
Yeah.
thought that aspect of it was really good.
Almost, you know what? Coming to think of this, it almost kind of falls without necessarily all the dramatic touches, but it's a kind of like a Romeo and Juliet story, like a forbidden love, two families that are at odds, and they kind of want they make it work amongst all this family tension, but with a comedic twist on it,
Yeah, there
which
and there's
is.
also a movie from back in the day with Sidney Poitier called "Guess Who's Coming to Dinner" that has like a
Oh yeah, I
similar,
didn't know he was in that.
like a similar premise where like white girlfriend, white family meets her like black. I mean, it's been done a lot. I mean, even Ashton Kutcher at one point, I think in the mid 2000s, like kind of remade it with, it was called "Guess Who," and I think it was him, Zoe Saldana, and Bernie Mac were in it, and they kind of had that kind of same
Okay.
similar premise as well.
Flipped it around. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought they did a good job with this, and yeah, ignore those reviews because I think you guys will enjoy it if you guys watch it. So yeah,
Yeah.
should we get
That's our watches.
into
Absolutely.
what
Big.
small things happened
Yeah.
today? Very small
Some
things.
DC news today from James Gunn himself. We got a look at what the next few years of the DC universe can look like. And I'll let you take this away, Gaius.
Yeah, so. Well, I thought it was funny that he said that he was going to reveal this plan, and January, and I like that he waited till the last day of
Oh yeah,
January
it
to
is the
do it.
last day.
January 31st,
He wasn't kidding.
he made everyone wait till the last possible minute moment. But here we are. This is chapter one of their DC slate that they're calling Gods and Monsters. And this portion of the DCU is going to be released between 2025 and 2027. And we have five movies and a few TV shows as well. They are going to, in this part of the announcement, I think they're going to be interconnected in some way. But what he announced was Superman Legacy, which he had already said he was doing a Superman movie with a younger
Right.
Superman, which is why Henry
Now we have
Cavill
a
is.
title.
Yeah, now we have a title, Superman Legacy, and it will come out on July 11th, 2025. This all could change later. I mean, I know there's a lot. This is reading,
Yeah.
but
Take this with a grain of salt.
tentative release date,
So,
July
yeah.
11th, 2025.
And it's a Superman movie that is supposed to be setting up and beginning the new universe. Is that right?
Yeah, it's gonna be the start of like the DCU. So I guess skipping ahead a little bit, they said that the Flash, which comes out June 16th, is going to kind of reset everything,
The
which
universe,
they
right.
kind of been hinting at that like a little bit.
That'll be the
But
day
yeah,
before my birthday.
well, there you go. That's perfect.
Yeah.
And then Peter Safran, who's also co DC head with James Gunn, he was the one that said that it is really the start of the DCU. And it's not going to be an origin story. And it
Right.
focuses on Superman's balancing his Kryptonian heritage with his human upbringing. He's the embodiment of truth, justice, and the American way. He's kindness in a world that thinks of kindness as old-fashioned, according to Peter Safran. So, I mean, yeah, we lost Henry Cavill, but I still don't mind like
Yeah, we
them
still don't
going in
know who
this
this
direction.
next Superman will be. So, you know what? There's still some excitement to look forward to. I also thought it was interesting. I guess I can't really say I'm surprised they're doing this, but interesting that they're starting the new universe again with a Superman project like the DCEU
Yeah.
began with Man of Steel in 2013.
Yeah, I mean,
So, hopefully,
I guess you have to start it with like one of the names, like either
he's
him
their
or Adam
foundation.
or Batman or like, yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
it makes sense. Also in this 2025 section, the new Batman and Robin title, it's not going to be, there is going to be a sequel to The Batman. This is going to be something separate. I know that might confuse some people,
Yeah.
but what there's going to be like the DCU, which is like kind of the stuff we're talking about with Superman and like all these other projects that we're going to mention. But then if you're thinking about like the sequel to the Batman or the sequel to Joker, which is still happening, or like the Penguin HBO Max series, which is still happening, that's going to be like the DC Elseworlds kind of section of the movies and TV shows. They do that in the comic books too. So
Right.
he's like, why can't we just do that as well in the film and TV world? So they're going to be their own separate entity, and I
I'm glad
think
they're
that won't.
keeping them.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll be too confusing to most people. I think
No,
like they'll be
shouldn't
able
be.
to, they'll get it. In addition to that, there is going to be a Swamp Thing film as well. I wasn't expecting that to be a part of
Neither was I.
the chunk.
Yeah, the release. It's the one I'm the most excited for of all the things that he mentioned. It's
Oh,
gonna be a
really?
straight up horror show. Which
Yeah,
I
he's
know
a.
there is a one season of a Swamp Thing from a few years ago, which I haven't
Yeah.
got around to seeing yet, but the premise of it alone looks pretty cool, so I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, he said it will investigate the dark origins of the creature, tonally different from Superman and Batman and Robin. They want a darker character to interact with the mainstream DC characters. And just for a frame of reference, there was a Swamp Thing movie back in 1982, which was directed by Wes Craven and starred Adrian Barbeau. And then you mentioned there's also a 1989 sequel to that. And you mentioned the 2019 CW series, which actually got really good reviews when it
Yeah,
came
and they
out. It
canceled
just,
after one season.
and they canceled after one season.
Good
And
job,
yeah,
CW.
and I didn't really mention this about the Brave and the Bold, which is like the Batman and Robin project. It will feature Batman and his son Damian Wayne as Robin, who is a little who Gunn describes as a little son of a bitch, assassin murderer who Batman takes on, who is Batman's actual son that he doesn't know exists for the first 8 to 10 years of his life. It's a strange father and son story about the two of them, and it's based on Grant Morrison's run of the Batman. Then Safran added that this is going to feature other members of the extended Bat family, just because we feel like they've been left out of the Batman stories in the theater for far too long. And he also said, it's interesting too. Yeah. And also, you know, he said that Matt Reeves is also working on his script to The Batman, which is officially titled The Batman Part 2. He kind of compared it to like almost like The Godfather and The Godfather Part 2. Like he's making these kind of like epic stories. And like he thought it was fair to like give it that kind of title. Like, you know, he has a lot of faith in it. That has a tentative release date of October 3rd, 2025.
Can't come soon enough. Holy shit. I'm excited for that.
Robert Pattinson will still remain Batman for Matt Reeves, but Gunn and Safran will be seeking a new actor to play Batman for The Brave and the Bold. Also, guys, if you guys were expecting Ben Affleck to come back, it looks like he's not a part of the DCU as Batman anymore. They didn't name him for a project, but he has been talked about. They've talked to him about directing a project, so he still might be involved in some capacity.
I'm hoping that might be the one. Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be cool if he's still kind of a part of that.
Time will tell.
Time will definitely tell. And then there is also going to be a film centering around Supergirl and the deeper universe DC Rogue Squad, The Authority. So I don't know much about The Authority, but I will read what they said. They said there's great Wildstorm characters that were popular for a long time, and we're incorporating them into DCU. Gunn loves the property because it's a mix of anti-heroes who take matters into their own hands despite what governments advise. This sounds very like Suicide Squad, or a little bit. He said right now a basic story is being written out, and the Authority was created after Stormwatch, a planetary defense force against aliens, was destroyed. The former member of that group, Jenny Sparks, created the Authority with her Stormwatch black teammates, Swift and Jack Hawksmoor. The team includes the Engineer, Jerome Thorndike, Apollo, and Midnighter. I've never heard of them before, so I'm learning this along right with you guys as I read it. Still sounds cool, though, but it does sound like very Suicide Squad-ish, at least a little bit to me. And then the Supergirl thing, Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, will be a feature based on Tom King's comic book series from 2022. In our series, we see the difference between Superman, who was sent to Earth and raised by loving parents from the time he was an infant, versus Supergirl, who was raised on a rock, a chip off Krypton, and watched everyone around her die and be killed in terrible ways for the first 14 years of her life, and then came to Earth when she was a young girl. She's more hardcore. She's not exactly the Supergirl we're used to seeing. That sounds pretty
interesting.
I like that. I think it sounds really cool.
I'm not like crazy. So like people that may not have heard me say this yet before, like again, like superheroes, like not my domain necessarily. They're like, right. Don't get me wrong, like Dark Knight trilogy, for instance, some of my favorite movies. Like there are things I like about it. On that note, Supergirl's never been a character I've particularly been fond of. I haven't really seen a lot of material of hers, but just by hearing like the description of where her story in the universe is going to go, like I will say that like I'm on board for that, the sound of that, her story and her trajectory. I like the sound of it.
I do too. This is a much different direction than, I mean, I guess what most people know is the CW series. It's a little bit lighter. I actually didn't mind that when it started. It kind of fell off, but like, yeah, I like this kind of darker approach a bit more. And then I guess we get to the TV side. So there is going to be an animated series called Creature Commandos, which is written by James Gunn. God, he's going to be so busy. He's like writing the Superman movie.
That's what I was thinking.
Creature Commandos is an animated TV series. He says animation will lead into live action and back into animation. It's a way to tell stories that are gigantic and huge without spending $50 million an episode. He said he has already written
really
this.
Smart.
Well, I guess he is like kind of got free time because he said he's already written it and it's done.
Huh.
Creature Commandos is comprised of military superhumans, including a human leader, a werewolf, a vampire, Frankenstein's monster, and a Gorgon. Gunn pointed out that Weasel from his Suicide Squad will be on the show, and this band of misfits were introduced in Weird War Tales number 93 in 1980. Yeah,
sounds like Guardians of the Galaxy, similar kind of.
It does, really.
Misfits kind of cast, yeah.
Also, we're going to get a Peacemaker live action series, Waller, which will feature. So this was like the only like official like live action talent for a future project that they announced, that they're keeping Viola Davis as Amanda Waller. Like, she's not going anywhere. She got introduced in Suicide Squad, and then she was in The Suicide Squad. And she had a cameo in Black Adam. I think that's all of them. I can't remember. I'm trying to remember all the
Peacemaker. She in Peacemaker?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She did. She did have a Peacemaker cameo as well.
Right. I just read that today. I haven't seen it.
So he says, we're using the same actors. This is a continuation of Peacemaker. I'm working on Superman, so we can't do Peacemaker season two. We're working on Waller in between. Viola Davis is very much involved. I guess it kind of answers the question about, some people were like, well, what's going on with Peacemaker and John Cena? But if he's not doing season two of that, then I guess, I'm not saying that John Cena's done, but it just might be on hold while they work on this stuff.
Let's bookmark that, because I want to come back to Waller once we get through the rest of the shows that are announced.
We also have a Lantern series. This has been talked about a lot. HBO Max greenlit one a while ago, but I think they're kind of dumping what they were going to do and like going in a new direction. It's an HBO Max live action series. And he says, our vision for this is like True Detective. That's what Peter Safran says. it's terrestrial based. It's got two of our favorite Green Lanterns, Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart. It plays a really big role in the main story that we're telling you across our film and television universe. This is a very important show for us. And Safran specified that this version is different from the one that Greg Berlanti had in the works at the streamer. And because that one was more of a space opera. And this is going to be more in the vein of True Detective. Mm. Interesting.
I like the sound of that.
I like the sign of it too. I'm intrigued by it.
I love True Detective.
I do too. And then we have Booster Gold and Paradise Lost. So let me find the description for that. Paradise Lost will be an HBO Max live action series. It's going to be a Game of Thrones-ish story. And it's going to be about the Amazons and the birthplace of Wonder Woman. This drama is really about the political intrigue behind the Society of All Women. How did that come about? What's the beautiful truths and ugly truths behind all of that? And what's the scheming like between all the power players in that society? The series will take place before the birth of Diana, so before the birth of Wonder Woman. And then Booster Go, which is the last one. HBO Max TV series is about a loser from the future who uses future technology to come back to today and pretend to be a superhero. Imposter Syndrome as a Superhero, describes James Gunn. And I think I got through all the...
Yeah, that sounds like 10. That's a big, big day of news for DC.
Yeah, what did you want to get back to on Waller?
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask your opinion on like, what do you think overall? Maybe not necessarily if there's individual projects you're excited for, like the news that he expressed today, like what's your overall take on what you're feeling like going forward?
Well, I'm excited for Superman Legacy. I am intrigued. That'll be cool. I'm intrigued by the Brave and the Bold, the Batman and Robin like son story a bit too. I'm extreme. Supergirl one sounds interesting because it sounds like it's a little darker take on that character. I'm really interested in that. After reading that, because I didn't fully read the description for Swamp Thing, but like knowing that it might be more of like a total tone change and a bit more horror, a little darker too. I'm interested in that as well. I'm also interested in some of the things that he kind of said that like gives some people hope that maybe some of the people that were a part of the roster already aren't completely done. So he was asked about, Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman, Zachary Levi, right. Shazam, because Shazam's coming out in March, and Jason Momoa, Aquaman. And he said that in reference to, like, you know, the original Wonder Woman, Shazam, Aquaman, and another reference to The Flash, which he actually called, because he's seen it, he said it's probably one of the greatest superhero movies ever made. I've been hearing this a lot about The Flash. And James Gunn is doubling down on that notion. What he said was, these four movies are terrific. There's no reason why any of the characters or the actors who play in those characters are not a part of the DCU. There's nothing that prohibits them from happening. He also expanded on that. He said he has talked to Gal Gadot, and they've talked about like her kind of playing around in projects for DCU. They said that she's game for it. I think it's just a matter of like negotiating it and seeing what works out.
Right.
Same thing with Jason Momoa and Aquaman. Now I know there's like been this talk about him playing Lobo, he wants to play in the DCU. But James Gunn said, you know, we're not going to have him play two characters. We are seeing what you're not. We're going to wait and see what happens after the release of Aquaman 2, and that's not even until the end of the year. So we have like a long time before they even make a decision on that. And,
which is maybe a good thing.
Yeah. And then there's Ezra Miller and The Flash. Basically what they said, like I said, they said it's one of the greatest superheroes ever made, The Flash. They said that it does reset everything. And when it comes to Ezra Miller playing the role after the release of The Flash in June, they said they are all basing it on conversations they'll have after he goes through his recovery.
Yeah.
Ezra Miller has a lot of self-described mental health
If
issues.
he's not in
And,
prison before that,
yeah,
like
it was.
I think we still got to see how these things are going to play out, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, there could be criminal charges that maybe haven't been brought
Well,
forth yet. So I think it's interesting that they're considering that.
I think that case in Vermont where there was multiple bottles of alcohol stolen from a house, he pled in that one. He got a plea deal. It was like a $500 fine, I think, and a year of probation.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard
Has
this yet. Maybe it's
to leave.
resolved.
Has to live a clean lifestyle, which means he can't like drink or anything like that or do drugs or
Right. Best thing for them right now.
because they rescinded the burglary charge, I guess. But if
Right.
he violates his probation, they are allowed to add that back in and charge him with it if he violates his probation. There's also the other case of like abduction and grooming, and then like
Hey, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm thinking about.
that wasn't addressed in this DC announcement. Peter Safran was the one that commented on it and said that they are upbeat about Ezra Miller's recovery, and that speaking with him in the last couple of months, he's seems like he's getting better, and they're just gonna wait
That's
and see
good.
and have they're gonna wait and see and have the conversation, after the movie comes out. That mean, if anything, it's a good stall tactic. It's so they don't have to like talk about what they're gonna do
That's
about it
exactly
yet.
what it is.
And
Sure, they are not looking. I'm sure that's the last thing they really want on people's minds right now. And I'm thinking they're praying that this all goes under the rug smoothly and quietly. And
yeah.
time will tell on that. I still can't believe they're even entertaining the thought of using Ezra Miller going forward, because as far as I'm concerned, Ezra's a loose cannon. I mean, yeah, sure, they might be on a road to recovery and stuff, but I just think it's too much damaged goods to really be messing with a brand new franchise. So it's interesting. And
I think so
this
too.
ties, yeah, unless there's anything else you wanted to say about Ezra, this is where I wanted to tie back into the Waller show.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So like overall, I'll share too my thoughts on the news of like everything that came out today. I'll say it's mixed, like one way or the other. Like I maybe thought I would, like I'm excited for some of the properties, definitely without a doubt. Like Swamp Thing I mentioned, I'm all about that. I'm gonna try and get that one season of the CW show in eventually, because you know it shouldn't be too heavy of a lift. I don't know how many episodes it is, and I can't imagine it's more than 10, if even 10. So that'll be in, and I think the concept of Swamp Thing is a really underutilized DC property that I'm think is really cool. And like when you mix in like horror and superheroes, I just think that's a great pair. And James
Yeah, they
Gunn
do.
and his siblings are great at doing that. Like, have you seen Brightburn?
Yeah,
Who I can't
I love
remember which
Brightburn.
Gunn did that. Yeah,
I love
Brightburn's
Brightburn.
sweet.
Yeah, I know that got mixed reviews from people, but I really enjoyed it. I thought that whole horror movie
Evil
like
Superman concept, like
Yeah,
that was a
like,
sweet
what
movie.
do you do if like the person that was supposed to be sent here to like kind of save the world like was a complete evil
Could
son of a bitch? Yeah,
destroy
I thought
it.
it could destroy it. Yeah, I thought that was a really cool concept.
Yeah, I like the idea of the brave and the bold, like the Batman and his biological son being crime fighting, being his Robin. I think will be interesting to see. I think my thoughts on that will could change depending on who gets cast, who's attached to direct, and like what direction that goes in. But I think it's a cool concept, at least for now. What I like in there, I thought the lanterns, I don't know how I feel about it yet. The fact that they're going with it as one of their staples for the beginning
Yeah,
of their new
saying
universe is going to be interesting.
how important this show is, like they made it seem like it's like a really like a centerpiece of like
Yeah.
their universe building. Yeah, I thought
And
that was interesting.
so when I first saw that they had, and it's going to be the show, right? Lanterns. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, because like I didn't see the Ryan Reynolds one from like 2011 or whatever, whenever that one came out. What I don't like about the thought of Lantern is that it's going to be just the nature of like the Green Lantern mythos and everything. It's going to probably be a very big CGI heavy aspect of that universe, which like again I'm just not the biggest fan of. I'd like to keep it practical and grounded, but the fact that he says they're going to take a true detective approach with it, maybe keep some of it on Earth or something, I think there could be some hope for that.
I think
And I
so
think it's
too.
going to be a little bit of like a thriller, not necessarily horror, but a grounded, thrilling approach, detective style story to that. I like the sound of that. But really, again, now finally tying it back to Waller, I guess I'm not thrilled that they're going to keep Viola Davis as Amanda Waller going forward. Like I liked her. I thought she worked in Ayer's Snyder Cut. I thought she felt recycled in James's Suicide Squad. I say Snyder Cut? I meant to say Ayer Suicide Squad. I don't know if I'm
Or
mixing
suicide,
two.
like in the original
That's what
Suicide
I meant to
Squad.
say. Yeah, I thought she was good in that. I think it's interesting they're gonna keep her going forward when they've axed so many other people. I don't necessarily think like I don't think take away Amanda Waller character, but I would have thought maybe start fresh. So that was interesting to see. I don't know how I feel about that yet.
I think they maybe just want to keep an actress of her pedigree on board. That could be it. She is
Yeah.
a good actress.
Oh,
But
absolutely.
that brings up an interesting question though, because like I have a list of complaints. They're not mine. I'm just looking on Twitter.
Yep.
So the big thing is, all right, you seem like you're alluding to keeping, Viola Davis as Amanda Waller, open to keeping Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, open to keeping Jason Momoa as Aquaman, very open to keeping Ezra Miller as the Flash,
Too open.
open to keeping Zachary Levi as Shazam, but then we couldn't keep Henry Cavill as Superman. So it's like there's this complaint about like you're doing kind of a reset, but not really, because like you seem open to like keeping certain people on, but not other people. And
Exactly my point.
now he did make a comment that like he said that Henry Cavill was never hired by their regime. They knew they weren't going to use him. Like he was hired, I'm not even hired. The cameo happened before they took over in Black Adam. They had no control over what that narrative was going to be. They had to just watch it.
Yeah.
They'd be like, and no, that was a lot of other power players, kind of getting in the mix and trying to make things happen. And they just had to sit there and be like, all right, well, once we take over, this is not what we're going to do.
Right.
So like, and they admitted that like Henry Cavill, like his exact words, got dicked around by a lot of previous regimes at Warner Brothers. Like, when it comes to playing that character, but he was just like, he's just not our Superman for the story that we want to tell.
Yeah.
But I could see the complaint from people being like, well, you're keeping these people, then why are you like keeping them? Like, if you're gonna do like a reset,
So
then reset everyone.
if you're gonna,
And
yeah, if you're gonna do it all the way. That's why I'm like, I don't like that. It's just like
yeah.
it. I don't know that it'll be a bad decision. Again, I meant to say this. I'll be the first to bite my tongue and like say if I'm wrong, if I think it ends up being a good move for them and I see it,
Yeah.
I'll say it, I'll retract. I just think that it could end up being maybe not the right move, but we'll
Right.
see.
And we also don't have full. I mean, I guess there's also the issue of the Suicide Squad. Is that kind of done too? Like, is Margot Robbie done as Harley Quinn? Because, I know it's the
I haven't even thought about
Elseworlds.
her.
Yeah, they're doing the whole Elseworlds thing with like the Joker sequel, and Lady Gaga's playing Harley Quinn and Joaquin Phoenix Joker sequel. So that'll be separate. That'll be separate. But is like, are those characters done, or is Margot Robbie done? It's like how many of these are like what exists anymore and what doesn't? And I think that,
Right.
I mean, they announced a lot today. It was a lot to unpack, and I think once people unpacked it and realized there were still like a few unanswered questions, it was like, oh well, what are you gonna do about this? Oh, also, I wanted to mention, they also Peter Safran did mention the scrapped Batgirl movie, which kind of pissed a lot of people off today too,
Oh.
because he said that the movie as it was unreleasable, and that David Zaslav made the right decision because he said it would have hurt DC if they would have released the movie. Now there's all these rumors that
Wow.
like the Batgirl movie got either a little bit of a higher test screening score than Black Adam, or about the same. They released Black
Yes.
Adam and they didn't release Batgirl, so there's that argument too. But also, Black Adam starred Dwayne Johnson, so they were going to make that kind of work.
To try and say those are the same thing is, I think,
Yeah.
futile. I think they
Now,
made the right call. I don't know who's asking for that movie, and I don't know.
yeah.
I wouldn't have seen it, but
Yeah,
very different
I do feel bad for the people that
stars.
worked on it, because, like, I mean, they did
Yeah,
work
agreed.
hard on it, and,
They should have had
and
another
like,
shot to do something else.
yeah, but the fact that, like, even the new guys were like, yeah, like, what we saw from it was unreleasable, and, like, they made the right decision. Like, it was a hard decision, but they made the right decision to shelve it.
A
And,
$90 million
wait, actually,
decision.
not just shelve it, they destroyed it. They made sure that, like, no one can, like, it won't see the light of day.
Oh,
I don't think so. Like,
wow.
oh, it's gone. And and then he also spoke on, I mean, the Zachary Levi stuff. There was a trailer for
Yes,
Shazam
I've been
Fury of
waiting
the
to get to
Gods
that.
that came out. Trailer, you know what? I won't get into the trailer too much. I will say that it looks fun, but it has the same problem that you and I have been bringing up the last 2 weeks. It shows a lot. Like, it feels like what appears to be like the climactic battle in the movie, and I'm just assuming this, it was looks like
Right.
they showed a lot of it in the trailer. Still looks fun, but like, and it also
Don't
looks like
get that
they're gonna,
trend.
I don't get it either. And it also looks like they're gonna maybe transition the character more into being like a real hero. And like, I'm not saying that making it darker, because that concept isn't dark, but like, it may not be as like, I thought the first one was fine, it was fun, but it was like, it felt very like kid friendly, the first Shazam
Right.
movie.
I still haven't seen it, but
That's
I
what it kind
probably
of felt
will.
like. But James Gunn did mention the whole because I went online on Twitter and saw that Zachary Levi was trending, but it was the same day as the trailer, so I thought he was trending. But no, he was really trending. He was trending because he appears to be like anti-vaccine,
anti-Pfizer in particular, which is whatever. But what did he say?
So let me see if I can pull up the original tweet, because I know I sent
it. He responded to a Pfizer tweet, or no, sorry, not a Pfizer tweet. Just a tweet that asked, I think it posed a question, like, do you think Pfizer is a threat or a
danger to the world? Yeah,
danger to the world.
And he responded with hardcore agree. And then
right,
things move fast on Twitter. So everyone was like, basically like, oh, now you just saved me like a few bucks to not see your movie. And like, right. and then they were tagging him in old videos. Like, I guess he was on Joe Rogan, and they were like, oh, like, there's no secret that like Zachary Levi's always been like this. He's like a pro Trump, blah, 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 blah. There was a lot of stuff they were like saying about him. And you know, that's what happens when people get bored on Twitter. They dredge up like bullshit. And
I've never been the one to like, I don't get all up in arms about an artist's like personal views and stuff. Like, I don't agree with Zachary Levi in this. It would literally have no effect on what I would choose to watch of his in the future. Yeah. I just haven't seen any of the Shazams. I might see his new one when it comes out. But I think this is a great point. I didn't even consider this until we started talking about it, but it raises that question that maybe we can touch on for a bit.
Yeah.
About separating the art from the artist. And if people are able to do that, is that something that you've ever struggled to do with? Is it a case by case basis? What do you think about that?
So I feel like I do it a lot. I mean, I guess a good example, Michael Jackson is a good example. I love Michael Jackson. I love the music.
Love that guy to death. Like, he was
very,
awesome.
Very, very problematic personal life though.
Controversial. I mean,
if you believe everything that you hear, to a lesser extent, I like some of Chris Brown's music still, but like, you know, he's also problematic. Yeah. And you know,
he's kind of escaped that. He got lucky in a sense. Yeah. Not that his career didn't suffer at all after the Rihanna incident. I feel like he in general has really evaded,
for the most part.
Big backlash. It still gets brought up and he'll never get away from it, but that's a good point.
If you're talking actors, I don't care too much for Kevin Spacey anymore, but he's been in some of my favorite movies. Like, I love Seven.
That's what I'm saying.
And I love American Beauty. I love A Time to Kill.
Absolutely.
He's been like in some of my favorite movies, but like, you know, definitely like I have to like look at that as like The Usual Suspects. Yep. Another good example. Like, I have to look at that as like, you know, he made great art.
So that shitty person. We can say that. Yeah, shitty person. But we can say then it's no problem to revisit art that he's been involved with that you already like, but maybe supporting art that he or they
new
make.
Art might be.
That's a different conversation.
I might have issue with that. Like, right. Yeah.
What about, and again, I'm not even playing devil's advocate. I'm just bringing up a point. So what about, like, what do you think about the other people? Say, like, for instance, let's just use a hypothetical, like Armie Hammer. Say he didn't get axed from Shotgun Wedding and like they had already been filming and it comes out amidst allegations. What do you consider like the other people that worked on the movie and like supporting them versus him? Like, I think that has a different role in the conversation. Would that change your opinion?
It does, I think. And I also think it depends on like what, if they're like making some kind of like road to like rehabilitation. Like, are they like trying to like fix whatever, you know, from
like,
what
like
I.
Like Ezra's case, I guess.
Yeah. And that one's still like up in the air for me though, because I seem so.
Yeah, me too.
It seems so controlled by like studio and not just him.
PR, yeah.
Right. You know, from what I've heard with Armie Hammer, like he's gone to therapy, like I think rehab too, for like various addictions and stuff. And he's trying to like get himself together. Thank you know what's God. a really good example of this is? I, despite some of the issues that he's had, just because I think that like, deep down, he has a good heart and like wants to fix himself. I think Shia LaBeouf is a good example because he's gone through a lot of this stuff and publicly he's gone through a lot of stuff and has been accused of stuff. I always kind of felt like, I'm pretty aware that he had like a pretty troubled upbringing and it was kind of rough for him growing up in the industry and like he went through a lot and he had his own issues. But I feel like he has tried to come out ahead of those. And like I can revisit your old stuff and even look into new things that you might do if it seems like you're, you know, changing for the better, I guess. Like, if
have
it
you
seems
ever
genuine.
Checked him out? Yeah. On that note, have you ever seen him on John Bernthal's podcast? I can't remember what it's called. The Real Ones, I think he has his podcast.
I've heard about it though. I haven't listened to it. Yeah.
I've seen it. bits, and I haven't like listened to like a full episode or anything, but I have seen clips just on different social medias of him and John Bernthal talking on John's cast, and it seemed like a very, it's really just an environment to have really genuine conversation, like as the name of the podcast suggests. Yeah. And you really get to look at Shea in a different light. And I'd say like for anyone that's like wants to know a little bit more about him, that would be a good place to start.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah,
I agree.
I wanted to bring that up. If anyone listening has any thoughts on, you know, separating the artist, if you're able to, if it's something that you can't get by, you know, feel free to let us know on any of our other platforms.
Yeah, yeah, we'll put that question. That's a good question to put out there, because it's interesting too, because basically what James Gunn said about Zachary Levi today, it was like, I'm not going to agree with everything that like
he handled it well. I read it.
You know, what my actors say, like, there's going to be things I agree with, there's going to be things I don't. And unless they do something completely, like, reprehensible, then, like, then we have to have, like, a discussion about, like, how do we move forward. And he has to be careful, too, because James Gunn went through this himself. I mean, he had, like, old tweets. He had old tweets come out, like, you know, years after he said them. And he got fired from, like, Marvel. And then it worked out. It worked out for the best for him, because the whole Guardians team rallied behind him. We're like, hey, no, we... You know, something that happened a long time ago. This is not the same guy he is today. And in that downtime, he ended up getting a job with DC and directing the Suicide Squad, and then got rehired by Marvel. And then look at him today. He gets to finish. He gets to finish his Guardians trilogy. He'll be done with Marvel after that, because he has to work exclusively with DC. But now he's like the co-head of DC Studios. So you can't come out ahead of it. And I think. And I think like
you can't.
I mean, I remember when I first heard that about him too. I was like, yeah, that happened years ago. Like.
I remember where I was when that stuff dropped.
It was Comic-Con weekend for me, because he was supposed to make an appearance somewhere that we were supposed to cover, and then he didn't. So then that was like, oh, well,
that's right, of course.
Like, that's why he's not here. That makes sense.
He's effectively dodged the cancel culture bullet, which
yeah.
is great, because he seems to be a person that was genuinely sorry and recognized that that time when he made those tweets is not the James that he is today. And so
yeah.
he's very deserving of his second chance, which is great.
So, like, in the grand scheme of things, I will still see Shazam Fury of the Gods. I don't have to agree with what he didn't really say a lot.
Right.
He just kind of just made, like, he tweeted two words. So it's like, you know,
yeah, exactly.
So, like, yeah, you don't have to agree.
I just think it's
like, but, you know, I'm not going to see Shazam to, like, listen to his stance on, like, whether he wants to be vaccinated or not, or which one he wants to use, or if he doesn't want to use any of them. It's all a personal issue. And, like,
it's funny when. Yeah, when people get all up in arms about stuff like that, and like I just saw many responses and tweets saying like what you mentioned, that they wouldn't be reporting the movie anymore. I'm like, he's the lead, but he's one component of the movie, and it's not like you're even going to see Zachary Levi. You're going to see Shazam, and Zachary Levi happens to be cast as Shazam.
Exactly.
So I just think it's funny when people would complete 180 or something like that, even though again I don't agree with his stance on it, but. It's just funny. I want to see what you thought about that. So
yeah. Well, to put a button on the DC stuff, if you could grade the announcement today, like what would you give? Like if it was a number or a letter grade, like what would you kind of throw at it?
B plus.
Oh, dude, me too.
B plus. Okay, great.
Yeah.
B plus. Some I'm more excited of. Some I'm more excited for than others. Again, like I mentioned, overall, like some properties there, I am excited for. I will be seeing. I'd say that. The stuff going forward, I'm more invested in the Elseworlds side of things, but like there's enough content in there that I'm excited for. I'd positively gauge the news today, so that's cool that you have the same letter grade.
I'm also more interested in the Elseworlds stuff, but that's because I like the more like grounded, a little bit more realistic things. Even though, like, one of my buddies was like, but you like Marvel shit. That's not grounded. I was like, the stories are grounded. Maybe not so much like what's going on. But yeah, I'm more into that, and I'm glad that they're trying to keep like all the talent they can behind the scenes, like Matt Reeves be one of them. I know they want to keep the director of Flash around as well, Andy Muschietti, who directed It Chapter 1 and It Chapter 2, and also did The Flash. If The Flash is as good as they're saying it is, I don't blame them that they want to keep them.
So, and
also, before my friend wants me to mention, Blue Beetle is still happening. Has to happen. I mean, not just has to. We have like a superhero movie with a Latino lead. I don't think they're going to dump it anyway. But like James Gunn said that Blue Beetle is sort of in its own world, but it also fits in directly into their DCU, as well as Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. Blue Beetle comes out August 18th, so that'll be here before we know it, actually. And then and then Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom will be Christmas Day. So like, there are a lot of projects that are still alive, and everything's not dead. There is also, like we said, there's still hope for, like, if you're a Gal Gadot Wonder Woman fan, maybe she's still there. I mean, you like Jason Momoa's Aquaman? They didn't give a definitive answer, so maybe he's still there too. Ezra gets their shit together. He can stay. And Zachary Levi, you know, just focus on being funny. You might be able to stay too. I don't know.
Exactly.
So yeah, that was a lot to unpack, but I think we did pretty well on like getting everything.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. No stone left unturned.
No stone left unturned. kind of focusing on entities usually being messy. Like Warner Brothers has been messy for a very long time, but now they're getting their shit together. The Academy right now appears to be messy. And actually, even more since yesterday when we were going to do this, more people have come out. More people have come out in her defense. And by her, I mean Andrea Riseborough, who got a surprise mini Oscar nomination for two Leslie last week. And I'm going to preface by saying I haven't seen it. I've heard I have our boy Merc with the movie saw it. He thought she was great in it. So we know someone that's seen it. That's not a celebrity that voted for her. I'm not knocking it. I'm not knocking the nomination. Like if a smaller movie can sneak in and like get the recognition, I'm all for it. I guess what's being brought up is how it got the recognition and whether or not that was
fair. Which I'd like some insight on because I'm not sold that on one way or another that I think that was suspect way of getting a nomination. Like there could be things I don't really know about. I don't necessarily know the standard way of campaigning, like for Academy and acting nominations. So once we get some more out there on how this went down, maybe I'll change my mind. But I am reading right now that 28 minutes ago, Variety released an article saying that Andrea Riseborough will retain her Oscar nomination for Two Leslie, which so it looks like they've come to a decision. Yeah, good for her. I didn't realize she, until after you'd mentioned it, like when we were covering the Oscar nominations a couple weeks ago, she was in Brandon Cronenberg's previous movie, Possessor, which I'd seen on theaters. I just didn't recognize her name, and she was great in that.
She's a chameleon of an actress. Because I saw Possessor and I forgot that she was even in it. Before that, I've only seen her in Disconnect, which I really loved, and I thought she was great. But everything that she's been in, she's been so different. And like I mentioned her just being like a chameleon to someone else, and like someone said that was the best way to describe her. It is interesting though that she will retain her Oscar nomination, but they said social media offenders will be addressed by the Film Academy. And by social media offenders, they're basically saying like the director's wife, Mary McCormick, did reach out to a lot of rich and famous people and friends and members of the Academy, like Gwyneth Paltrow, Minnie Driver, Charlize Theron, Francis Fisher, Edward Norton. And it would have been different if they would be like, hey, like, see this little movie because no one's seen it. And, you know.
Literally no one has seen it.
Kind of form your own opinion, right?
Yeah. $28,000 at the box office. I'm seeing.
Yeah, that's crazy. But then it became like, and those people went to took a social media and were like, oh, you have to like see this movie. Kate Blanchett shared something on social media. Edward Norton, who barely posts on Instagram, posted about this movie and this particular actress. The real the sticking point is Frances Fisher. And for those who don't know who she is, if you've seen Titanic, she plays Kate Winslet's mother in Titanic. She basically put out on social media that Viola Davis and Danielle Wyler, who were kind of predicted to get into a slot for Viola Davis for The Woman King and Danielle Deadwyler for Till, basically told people don't vote for them because they're going to be safe. Like Andrea needs your votes more because her movie's smaller and basically she won't be as safe. And I think that is where they're kind of looking at is like you're telling people to take votes away from certain people, and that's where the issue kind of is. And I guess I can see the point there, but I kind of mentioned this yesterday before, you know, the power outage. Studios do this all the time. They like major studios like pump money into Oscar campaigns all the time.
Right, exactly.
And
so how like, is it different?
And I'm trying to look for. Yes, okay. So there's a few. They talked to a few people in like members of the different branches of the academy, and like, you know, is this wrong? Is it not? Most of the people, they talk to different people from like the actors branch, from like screenwriting branch, different branches of the academy. A lot of people said that you could see basically some of the emails I get basically telling me to like vote in one direction, then this wouldn't be an issue. This wouldn't be an issue at all. Like, this has been going on forever. Like this is not anything new. And I think it's because it seems to look worse because like now they're also throwing the issue of race into it as well, where like I don't think this is the case with Viola Davis, because I feel like Viola Davis has like a lot of
She's an
clout.
Oscar nominated. Yeah,
And
absolutely.
she's won an Oscar. I think like she I think she has a lot of clout in the industry. Danielle Detweiler is the more of a newer face, probably doesn't, but they're basically trying to say that like they don't have like the backing of their like popular rich white friends to push them ahead, and then that's why the optics look really bad as well. And I guess I can see the I see the point, I guess, if you're in that position.
I'm not convinced that that is the case. I'll at least entertain the argument. So this is a question I have for you, who will be more well-versed in this than I. Do you think this is a case of because I would just assume individual Academy voters who, even if you are seeing Kate Blanchett's or Ed Norton's tweet saying to go check out To Leslie, and you say you even do have some Academy friends, some Oscar winners in your DMs or texting you telling you to go vote for Andrea Riseborough's nomination, you're still an individual. You're still a person who's capable of making your own decisions and voting for who you want. So even though people are campaigning and saying, oh, go vote for Andrea Riseborough, maybe don't vote for Viola Davis because enough people are going to vote for her. At the end of the day, it's still their decision to vote. It's not necessarily because somebody told them to or suggested they vote for somebody else. So this is why I'm not seeing this as so much of an issue. If people really wanted Viola Davis to voted in for the Oscar, they would have voted for her more so than somebody else. Like, am I wrong?
No, I mean, you're not. At the end of the day, it's going to come back to like down to like what you personally want to vote for.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Like nothing. Like I could like I could. Okay, you might persuade me to see it as an
Yeah,
Academy
exactly. Sure.
voter, but at the end of the day, like you sending me messages is not going to make me vote for her if I don't want to vote for her. Like
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
if anything, the positive thing is like you put eyes on this little scene movie. Like no one's seen it, still trying to find it. But you're not going to make me vote for her at the end of the day, unless they're trying to say that like maybe the messages get a little bit deeper than that, like vote for her and X,
Then
Y, and Z. Then that's
you'll get these
different,
benefits or something. We'll scratch
right?
your back. Like, and that's a whole different conversation. And I think that should be looked into. But as far as I can tell, this is a case of people, hyping up Andrea's performance in this movie, people going to see that movie and thinking that she's worthy of the nomination and people are voting for her, which is like fair. Anybody could do that,
I
which is
agree.
why I'm not convinced that this is as big an issue as it's being touted. And I'm happy to see that the Academy didn't rescind her nomination.
Now, I want to read one example of someone. This is from a member of the marketing and public relations branch of the Academy, and
Okay, that
they
would be
and
an
I, and then I'll
good
read like
perspective.
another like side of it. So they
Sure.
said, "Do you remember that scene?" And they all interviewed these people for Variety like anonymously, so they didn't give their names. But they
That's a
said, "Do
great
you?"
feature.
Yeah, they said, "Do you remember that saying when you were a kid? Snitches get stitches. Do you know how many movies and studios break the rules?" And I'm talking about blatantly emailing members in a chain and saying, "Okay, team, insert name here. It's voting day, and you know what to do. No one is going to snitch. Why would they?" Riseborough's team didn't do anything more than it, and I see yearly. They probably did it closer to the rules than not. She'll be fine, and of course, she was fine as of today because they let her keep her nomination. Now, here's the other side of this. And this member requested that their branch affiliation not even be identified. So they were already anonymous, and they don't even want their branch to be identified.
What branch does branch in this case mean?
Of the academy, like either you're in the actors branch or like the directing branch.
Oh,
Like
okay, I see.
they're talking to different voters.
So
So
they
they
want a
said,
real key. Okay.
yeah. So they said, "Can you imagine if Viola Davis was being accused of what Andrea Riseborough's team is being accused of? Viola wouldn't have gotten to the point of getting nominated. She'd have already been disqualified and probably kicked out of the academy. There's always one set of rules for one group and one set for another. Or should I say, one set for black people? We see this all the time and the academy knows it, yet they choose not to do anything about it. So do I think she'll be kicked out? Hell no, she wasn't. because white is always right. She'll probably even win because the system is made for people like her to thrive, to succeed, to flourish. For black people, there is no system. We aren't flourishing, but I'll wait and see what they'll do. And that's the other side of the argument. That's the more like extreme side of the argument. Then you got something that meets in the middle. Was her campaign aggressive? Absolutely. She wanted it, but they all do. Meryl Streep does and Kate Blanchett does. Listen, I don't know about not spending that much money on it. There's always money. No one does things for free. But play the game. Some win, some lose. We won, but the Academy won't punish her. They can't. Or they have to punish all of us. I don't have an opinion if she should get kicked out or not. I don't know enough about it. Probably not. And that's someone that's kind of like in the middle.
Yeah, I like how they put that, honestly. Like, they're just playing the game and their team happened to win. I don't think that second comment, the anonymous,
a little extreme.
I don't think that Viola Davis would be kicked out of the Academy. I think that's taking things a little extreme. I'm not gonna deny that African Americans face barriers and face stigma and, you know, problems, and of course all this exists. I'm not gonna deny that at all. I'd be foolish to. I think it's a little bit glossing over a little bit and just kind of painting it to be a little worse than it is. I don't think that that's a great example. Like, Viola be, you know, ostracized quite as badly if she were on the other side of these things.
I agree.
But interesting three different points. I think they all do make a good, they all work together to,
they
to
all form work this together.
Argument.
And I guess it's a very, like, you know, I think what's going to happen, like they said, they're reviewing what other voters did on social media, whether to see if like, they went too far campaigning for her. Maybe some of those comments saying like, don't vote for someone because they're safe, and like, vote for her because she won't be as safe. I think that's good to look into. And I think that's good.
I agree.
I mean, and I think next year we'll see a difference in this. She's also not the first like shock, like nomination to happen in the history of the Academy. Like, it's happened before.
Of course. Last either.
And you know what? That's why it's some people like, don't necessarily love award season, because it should be based on talent, and a lot of the times it is, but it's also based on like, how much can you get your project in front of someone's face and campaign for it. Now, I love Jamie Lee Curtis. I think she's awesome. Do I think she deserved a nomination for Everything Everywhere All at Once? Not necessarily. I don't think it's like I think it's completely Oscar worthy, but she campaigned for it. Like, she really did. And
she put herself out there,
and that's an example of someone that did it and it worked out for her. And I would never take that away from her because she's a legend in the industry. Like, that's fine. Like, she didn't do anything any different from like what a lot of them do.
Exactly.
Back in the day when Miramax was like the king of like Oscar season, Harvey Weinstein did this all the time, and he did things far worse than like, he apparently was a huge bully when it came to like getting his stuff noticed and getting nominations and sometimes wins. So at the end of the day, I think it's a disservice to Andrea Weisbrot, who like did good work and she's getting acknowledged for it. And
right.
I mean, if you got like famous friends to like help get your movie seen, then like, I don't see the problem with that. Like you said, how much did they make? $20,000?
$28,000 at the box office.
Well, like, one in the small town just saw it. Like, I don't know. That's where all that money is. Like,
exactly.
Like, so, like, there's that. Yeah. But I mean, I'm sure this
will it's be an interesting discussion.
It'll be talked about more, and like, you know, I will team her keeping. I'm glad they let her keep it, and like,
me too.
I hope she doesn't feel any like, what's the right word? Like she doesn't feel like bad that she got it,
undeserving or anything.
Yeah, undeserving of it. Yeah, like, you put in the work.
Hopefully, and the fact that she's recognized is rewarding for her. And I don't have an opinion until I see or if I see her performance. I honestly don't think it'll hold a claim to Michelle Yeoh. Like, I think she's running, or sort of even Cate Blanchett for Tar. Like, I really think the race is theirs, but you know, the fact that she's honored and she's in great company, so good for her. On the note of box office, I thought that'd be a good segue into the top five performers for the month of January. I mean, we are recording on the 31st. The month is over. We got our data. Yep. How did everything do this month?
We kicked off a year pretty well with like Megan and Avatar just like kind of carrying over from December into January, you know. And also, I guess I should mention this. I keep forgetting to mention Puss in Boots because it's quietly making a lot of money. It also quietly became one of the best reviewed movies of last year. It has like a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Reminds me of like Paddington.
Yeah, what called it? They call it the Dark Knight of the Puss in Boots. I forgot. Someone compared it to like the sequel just being so good and better than the original. But yeah, I mean, we had a pretty good. I mean, January is typically a month where you dump stuff, and it's usually the holdovers from like December are like the Oscar films or like all that stuff. But you know, they did a good job with releasing again to kind of kick off January, and that opened like $30 million. It's made $82.1 million to date, I believe, on a $12 million budget, which is why we're getting a sequel in 2025. So not only are we getting all these DC releases in 2025, we're getting a sequel to Megan 2025.
And Violent Night. I saw that as well.
And
That's getting a
Violent and
sequel.
Violent Night.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm gonna throw this in there too, because this happened today. And I thought it was kind of funny that they did this in the middle of like right after the DC announcement. I don't know if they were trying to compete, but Sony officially said that Bad Boys 4 is in pre-production and Will Smith and Martin Lawrence are coming back for that.
Those Michael Bay movies.
So the first two were directed by
First two.
him, and the third one was directed by a pair of brothers. Actually, were the guys who directed the Batgirl movie that got
Oh,
scrapped. Bad Boys for
okay.
Life was actually pretty fun, and that was like the last big movie of 2020 before almost like before everything like shut down and
Okay.
movie theaters
Wow.
closed. So yeah, that's
Weird.
happening. Honestly, it's been all about Avatar: The Way of Water. I won't diss it. I think it's gone on for 7 weeks at number one. This weekend, it made $15.9 million and brought its domestic total to $620.8 million, and it has a worldwide total of $2.1 billion. There were a lot of people, myself included, that said it wouldn't make it to $2 billion because I didn't think people were hungry for the sequel after that long. But I was wrong.
Well,
I'll eat
who's got
crow.
egg on their face?
I do. I do. I was like, I'll eat
Just
crow.
curious. Where are you getting this data from? Okay.
I'm on Box Office Mojo right now. It's
Okay. Oh my, I'm just in the wrong spot, clearly. Where do
so
I
you
go on
just
this stuff?
so I'm just so I'm just in the so where it says the domestic the weekend
Yep.
week so this weekend January 27th through 29th.
Gotcha.
And then I also will shout out a man called Otto, because we were talking about how like adult skewing movies aren't really doing that well at the box office, but I think it's a Tom Hanks thing. People like him, despite the fact that
Yep.
the Razzies
Except
didn't
the
like him.
Razzies don't.
Then the
Two nominations for that guy.
a man called Otto made $6.6 million over the weekend, only a drop of 24.4% from the previous weekend, brings its total to $45.9 million. That's good for an adult skewing movie in this current
45 million? Wow.
In this current climate. Then Missing actually did pretty well too. It's a sequel to Searching. Did you see Searching?
I have not seen Searching. My friend Cam, though, has seen it and praised
It's a
it, and
great
it's
it's so good.
on my list. I come across it, I'll watch it.
Yeah, it's so good. I didn't think it needed a sequel by any means, but it got one, and then it got decent reviews as well.
I can't
I
help but
can't
feel it's a similar formula. I don't know
yeah
how
I
much new or different this one will be, but whatever. Good for it.
How can you make it fresh? It opened when
Yeah.
it opened to $9.1 million its opening weekend, and then it actually only declined 38% to $5.6 million this weekend for a total of $17.5 million. I can't imagine that this movie costs a lot to make. So
Probably not. So good.
and honestly, for a thriller horror, I mean, they're not. It's not really a horror movie. I guess it's more of a thriller. But drop of anything less than 50% for a movie like this is good. It's a pretty
Okay.
decent hold.
That's data I appreciate you for, because this is kind of new to me, so
Yeah, so like
I don't
if
always
you
know what to make of those numbers.
so normally when a horror movie, unless it's like even when a horror movie is good sometimes, like usually drops like 50% or more. Like
Okay.
younger people tend to go to horror movies and they rush out opening weekend to go see them, and
Okay.
then by the following weekend it's like either it's, if it's really good then it gets repeat business. If it's somewhere in the middle, people are like, oh, I'll wait or whatever, but it's usually a big drop off for horror movies.
Okay.
Animated films tend to hold on a bit more. If an animated film falls hard, that means it's not good. So if it falls 45-50% in the second weekend, then folks
Okay.
aren't responding.
Stinker.
That happened to Lightyear when it came out. It dropped really hard in the second weekend. Puss in Boots has
Okay.
been having like great holds. Like it only dropped 11% this weekend to
Oh.
10.4 million. Has grossed 140.7 million domestically and $335.7 million worldwide. Yeah, it was one of the holdovers from the holiday season, and it's probably the only offering out there right now for kids, which is could be why it's doing so well.
Yeah, there you go.
But
An advertisement.
this weekend we have A Knock at the Cabin coming out this weekend. People in the industry are calling it the first significant tentpole release of the year, coming out on February 3rd. It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie starring Dave Bautista, who wants, he is continuing to prove that, like, he wants to be considered a serious actor, and, like, looks like he might have a winner here, because, like, the early reviews so far from people who have seen it already are very solid. I have a press screening tomorrow, so I'll be able to let you know if it's pretty good or not.
Right on.
What I heard is really good. Also has Jonathan Groff in it and Rupert Grint, also known as Juan Weasley from the Harry Potter movies. What we're going to ask you guys, and we're going to put this on Twitter and social media, and we're going to try to do this, especially when a bigger movie comes out, we're going to try to get you guys to predict the box office for opening weekend. So we want to hear, we're going to give our predictions, and I'm going to give Jackson a little background on, like, the last few M. Night Shyamalan movies. So,
yeah.
So he can be like, so he can have, like, a pretty good idea of, like, he's done in the last few years. And then we're going to ask you for your opening weekend predictions, and then we're going to share some of them on the next episode when we actually have the actual numbers on Monday after the weekend. See how close you guys came to guessing it. See how close we came to guessing it. I used to play this game a lot. As there used to be, I don't do the app anymore, but there was, like, an app where you can, like, predict the box office. It was a lot of fun. Sometimes sometimes I was dead on, and sometimes I was just way fucking off.
It's like gambling. It's, you never know when people are going to show up to the movies and or to what capacity they are. It depends on so many different factors. Just to preface, I love Knight. Yeah. Still haven't seen Old, but there was his gap where he kind of fell off a little bit. I haven't seen many of those movies, but since The Visit, when he really returned to form, I've seen his releases since then.
He kind of hasn't had, like, not old. So he hasn't had, like, I guess Old got mixed reviews, and also it opened in July 21st, 2021. We still weren't fully back. Last term is, like, movie theaters. They still weren't 100% back yet. Opened to $16.8 million. Grossed $48.2 million here, and then $90 million worldwide. But I keep in mind, it wasn't a healthy, like, box office climate. It did get mixed reviews, but I think if we were in, like, a more, like, stable climate then, it probably would have opened better. It probably would have done a little better. So if I go to – I'm only skipping ahead just because two movies are going to connect. So if I go to Split, it's 2016.
Right.
This was a big comeback for Night Shyamalan.
Huge.
On a $9 million budget, it opened to $40 million during the month of January, opened over Martin Luther King Jr. Weekend, grossed $138.2 million by the end of its run in the States, $278.4 million worldwide. So everyone was all, like, hyped up from Split because of the ending, and then it kind of set up the whole connection to, like, Unbreakable. And then we got Glass didn't get great reviews. Split got better reviews, but based
makes
on
sense. It, better movie.
based on the connection to Split and, like, everyone being hyped for it, it's still open to $40.3 million on a $20 million budget, made $111 million domestically and $246.9 million worldwide. And I'm gonna go back to what you said about The Visit, because that was, like, his kind of resurgence into after he had a few flops in a row. It was a smaller movie.
And finally, it's all himself, I think.
Oh yeah, these last few, I think he's done all himself.
Yeah.
For $5 million, it opened to $25.4 million, grossed $65 million. Yeah, grossed $65 million domestically, $98.4 million worldwide. So based on what you're seeing here, and based on, like, what seemed like early good reviews for A Knock at the Cabin, where do you think this is opening at?
I want to say, because I know from what I looked at anyway, I think in general it being targeted around the $20 million range, and, like, I feel good about it. I don't have a great sense of what's coming out around it. You said February 3rd it's opening? Like, yeah,
this coming weekend. Let me see if anything else is opening against
it. Yeah, that'll be a factor.
Like, 80 for Brady is opening against it. I forgot about that one.
Okay. How much about that one? I have a good feeling that it'll at least, I don't think it's going to open under 20. I don't want to go too extravagant. So I'm going to, like, just say safely lower end 23, higher end 27, maybe somewhere in that ballpark. I could be completely wrong, but I'd be happy to see something like that.
All right, we'll give you 23 to 27 million. I think
What are
I'm
you
gonna be a
thinking?
little. I'm gonna be like. I'm gonna go a little bit above you,
Okay,
not by
I
much,
wanted to go
not by,
higher. I just
not by,
got
not by
downed it.
much, not by much. I'm going 30, like an even 30 million on the
Okay,
weekend.
totally fair. I can see that happen for sure.
And that's gonna all. Now we're recording this, and this comes out Thursday. This all could change when like the reviews come out from critics, because of like if they're not great. Because like the thing is, like when we get
Yeah.
when we get early press screenings, like they let us like talk about it a little bit on social media, but we can't fully review it. And like usually it's like people like myself and others who like work for like independent sites that are a little bit more like positive when it come out of a film like this. And
Right.
then you start hearing from like The Hollywood Reporter and Variety and like all, and then like they feel a little bit differently, and they might
Right.
not be as enthusiastic. So like it all is going to come down to like what reviews are, I think. But the early word I'm hearing is that it's good. It's really good. I'm going
Okay.
30. You're going 23,
I
27.
like it.
And we apologize to everyone that we're not predicting 80 for Brady. It was just a flip of the coin. We just picked the bigger movie. But when the box office results come out, we will tell you how much 80 for Brady it
For sure.
over the weekend. But yeah,
And
final
we're gonna
prediction for
keep an
me
eye
is
on the
30.
box office.
Yeah, final prediction for me is $30 million. Final prediction for Jackson, 23 to 27. I'm cool with that. Sounds like that's reasonable. I wouldn't be surprised if it falls in there.
And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it does a little higher than it too. I can't see it coming in under because it's a
Yeah.
pretty modest. Actually, what it is, do you happen to know the budget off the top of your head? I don't want to make you go searching. Look that up. Can't remember though.
His last few movies have not had huge budgets. Makes me wonder, because like he, and especially, I wonder if he's still financing his own movies. Because I know he did it with like The Visit and Split, and some, and they've all were successful.
Right.
Yeah, I can't find anything. Well, you know what? I don't
I
imagine
don't
it's
remember
not
being
that
able to
high.
find I don't remember being able to find any number for it, which is why I'm asking, because
Oh,
I
well,
was
this could be
curious.
wrong. I found something on Flick on Click that says The Cabin is a mid-budget Hollywood movie that is made with a budget of $25 million, and I'll go with
Okay.
that. I'll go with that. That seems reasonable, because it looks
That
like
seems
it's
reasonable too.
yeah. So I mean,
Probably
your prediction
incorporating
would have it
everything.
open. Yeah, your prediction would have it dead on opening around its budget.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. Yeah, you heard our predictions. We want to hear yours. I'll be reaching out to you on social media throughout the weekend to kind of get like predictions. I'll even like, so this comes out Thursday. You'll probably hear Friday numbers maybe before you even listen to this. But you can use those Friday numbers as your gauge, because like, okay, it made this much on Friday, and then you can kind of give us your numbers after that. A lot could change between
Yeah.
Saturday and Sunday, though. I mean, there's movies can be front loaded. Movies can like, once like the Twitterverse gets involved and they have a lot to say, then either have like a good rise or a big fall. It all really depends. That's how unpredictable the box office
Yeah.
can be. But yeah, we're gonna do this for you. Pretty much whenever a big movie opens, we'll pick one. If there's more than one big movie that opens, we'll cover them both. Like sometimes that'll happen. We're gonna make this like kind of a normal like audience engagement part of the show to kind of
Yes.
see
We'd
how
love to
like.
put up a chance for people to engage and let us know what they think, or them take a guess at how we think movies are going to perform. So keep an eye on our socials, guys, to have a look at that and for your chance to let us know. Also curious to see how Infinity Pool is going to be doing, because like I said, I'll be going to see that from here and hoping it does well, because Brandon Cronenberg, son of David, hoping that movie does well for him. I don't know how Possessor did. I remember seeing it in theaters, really liking it, but he's up and coming, burgeoning filmmaker, and I want to see his projects do well. M. Night's been around, been in the game since the 90s at least.
Yeah, late
So he's
90s, yeah.
definitely got a lot of clout behind him, and people go to see him just for his name alone, like people like me.
Yeah.
And yourself, I'm assuming as well. So he's got a little bit of an edge, I think, competing with Brandon Cronenberg. But
I agree. And I also, some people remember there was a dark time for M. Night Shyamalan. I think it was after The Village, even though that opened really well
yeah,
and made money, but
I
everyone was
like The
like,
Village.
that's
Yeah.
when the shine started to come off, and everyone was like, "All right, are you a one-trick pony?" I was like, "This is not
Did
working
he?
anymore."
Yeah. Did
And
he
then I think,
follow up The Village with The Happening?
no, I think it went The Lady in the Water, and then the
Oh,
hap,
yeah.
and then The Happening,
Back to back.
and then After Earth. I think that. Oh, and then there was a last Airbender movie.
Avatar.
Yeah, there was a last
Yeah.
Airbender movie in there, and there's somewhere, and they were just all flops in a row. And then he kind
And he
of
had
like
this
went
movie
away.
called Devil as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that he produced. Yeah, and then he went away for a while, and then he came back to like a small little movie called The Visit, and then like back in our good graces. So
yeah,
there's that.
Glad to have him back.
I've been happy to have him back. I actually think he's a really good filmmaker, and like, you know,
oh, for sure.
It sucks when you get judged by like people are like praising, like, oh, we love The Sixth Sense, we love Unbreakable, we love Signs, and then you like screw up once, and they're like, oh, hack. Like, no, come on, guys. Like,
right.
Everyone gets a bad movie. He just had like a few in a row. He just needed to get those out of the system.
Still a great filmmaker.
Very no good one's filmmaker. Perfect. But yeah, I think that might be
guys. I think that covers everything that we wanted to get today. So yeah, guys, thank you again for tuning in. Again, stay tuned to our socials on Twitter and Instagram at Back to the Blockbuster. Coming weekend, always. I'm going to be having some chances for you guys to engage with our content up there coming forward. We want to hear from you. Also, you can check us out anywhere you guys get your podcasts. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, and Good Pods. Thanks again for tuning in. And stay tuned, too, because we're going to be covering the 15th anniversary of In Bruges, Martin McDonagh's action comedy. It came out in 2008. We'll have some videos going on, release and anniversary of that movie, too. So stay tuned. There's lots coming to the channel. Gaius, always a pleasure chatting movies with you, my friend. And you have yourself a good rest of your week.
Yeah, you too. This is why you're doing the outro now. That was perfect. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks, man. All righty, man. Well, I'm going to go enjoy Infinity Pool. I'll let you know what I think.
All right. Immediate reaction, because I really want to see it.
I'll DM you right away.
All right. Cool, man.